The following program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. You may have noticed that one Whole Foods Market store is not like the other. We're proud that each of our stores has its own quirks, a direct connection to the surrounding community, and buys and sells their own products. Whether it's artisanal chocolates exclusive to Bowery, small batch pickles in Chelsea, or a featured craft beer on tap at West 97th, you'll find that each store is a little bit different than the next. With six Manhattan locations, Whole Foods Market offers a taste of every neighborhood. Come see us in Tribeca, Bowery, Union Square, Chelsea, Columbus Circle, or the Upper West Side. Open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. For more information, visit www.wholefoodsmarket.com.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are Groundworks, Inc. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we design, install, and maintain gardens in and around New York City. Heritage Radio Network broadcasts from two shipping containers in Bushwick, Brooklyn, located next to Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street. We Dig Plants is produced and engineered by Jack Inslee. Yay, Jack! Our sponsor today is Whole Foods. And in gearing up for spring, you know, we have to eat a little lighter, no more mac and cheese dinners. Aww. We have to move on to salads and lighter food.
Not a pig fest like all winter.
Better for you food, energy food for spring activities and bathing suit wearing.
Oh, God, I don't want to think about that right
now. And we've got to be able to bend over and get into small, tight spaces for debris, cleanup, and pruning, etc.
Doesn't our job sound sexy?
So, salad, right? We're talking about salad. And that
I'll just have a salad.
And that seems pretty dull. So, how do you make your salad a little more zippy and fun to eat? Let's kick it up a notch to borrow
Bam!
to borrow a horrible phrase. And let's talk about edible flowers.
Yeah.
They taste great and they're fun and cheery and they make you look like a superstar when you're serving flowers in your food to your friends. So we thought today we would talk a little bit about how to identify flowers, how to prepare them, and how to use them in your cooking.
Yeah, so when you're grazing in your front yard, you know, you'll know what you're doing and not poison yourself and your family if your exactly. neighbors see you out there.
Exactly. So how do we bring the beauty of your garden to your plate? Today we're going to talk about edible flowers on We Dig Plants. So I just took a baking and decorating class at the Institute for Culinary Education, ICE, and I really wanted to learn how to decorate cakes and cupcakes into those gorgeous little treasures. And I was really, really, really happy when the instructor brought out, among all the other decorating materials, edible flowers. And it brought me back to my wedding, and I was describing to the caterer that I wanted edible flowers in the salads and in the food as a garden designer, you know, Carmen
yeah.
and I are always trying to get flowers into our life. And so she just sprinkled these flowers all around the table and kind of missed the point
in the salad
of the edible flowers. Hence the word edible flowers. Not
maybe she meant
flowers.
Edible, you know, edible flowers.
Anyway, so then it got me thinking, like, how does somebody know what flowers to use? I mean, you want to do this, but how do you know which ones
are safe
yeah. and what to do? So it's actually an old practice that was utilized in Roman times. And, the Indians and the Chinese have often used flowers. And, you know, it kind of originates from the herbalists of medieval times. And then it became very, very popular in Victorian times. So before we get started with this, though, we should talk about
safety.
Yeah. And you know, this show today is going to be based on research from a publication entitled "What's Cooking America," and of course, flowers and the edibleness of the flowers will vary from person to person, and what is generally deemed okay for one could affect somebody else horribly. So you really have to use your discretion. And the main thing is you want to use things off of this list, and you want to make sure, number one, is that the flowers that you're serving have no pesticides. That's the number one thing, that they're grown for edible uses.
Right. If you're not growing them yourself, you don't want to get flowers from a florist. Those are the most heavily sprayed with pesticides and fungicides of any crop.
Exactly. And so there are stores in the kind of culinary world that specialize in edible flowers as decoration, or, you know, grow them yourself.
Yeah.
Even if you're buying them from a farmer that says they're organic, you want to make sure that you're going to wash them off.
Yeah. Really treat them like any other thing you're going to eat.
Yeah. Like any fruit or vegetable. And you want to introduce them slowly into your diet. Too much of a good thing, you know, of course you go crazy on the pansies. You want to introduce them slowly because it could cause some digestive problems, which would be pretty uncomfortable. And the first thing you want to do is remove the pistils and the stamens from the flowers before you eat them. You want to separate the flower petals from the rest of the flower just prior to use. Mm-hmm. And this will avoid the wilt, so the kind of aesthetic value of the flower. And then you want to also remove the pollen.
Yeah, you don't want to eat that.
No, and pollen could cause allergies. You want to only really eat the petals of the flowers, with the exception of pansies, violas, and Johnny Jump Ups, which actually have their own unique taste, as do nasturtiums.
I love nasturtiums. They're actually very
peppery,
very,
and
very
fresh,
very good tasting,
kind of crunchy.
It's one of the most common, I think, of the edible flowers used in salads.
Right. And that's kind of where the jumping off point. But there are thousands of flowers that you can use, and we're going to go over some of them a little bit later. In the 14th century, peony roots were deemed a food fit exclusively for kings, and carnations and dianthus were important, so important that actually an entire book was written in the 14th century about them. So this is a very old
and
culinary
and habit. Also medicinal.
Yeah,
I mean, I know for a fact that the peony roots are used by the Chinese as medicine. You know, because I've when I was having some health issues, my acupuncturist, who was also an herbalist, had included had put together this quite atrocious tasting beverage this dried clump of herbs. And when I asked her what it was, I was very interested in knowing what the plants were.
Sure.
You know, she wrote down what all the things were, and one of the key ingredients and what made the bulk of the specimen was dried peony roots, which have a high medicinal value as well.
Exactly. The herbalist Gerard suggested in 1597 that oregano is very good against the wombling of the stomachy. Daisies steeped in wine with sage and southern wood were considered a cure for insanity if the patient drank this mixture for 15 days.
I'm going to have to try
that. Or they were just drunk. In medieval times, a bath of thyme was thought to cure hangovers and restore bravery and vigor to exhausted soldiers. Hmm. So do that when your Afghanistan husband comes home.
Now, I want to say I have a little bit of family history with eating flowers. And specifically stuffed squash blossoms.
Yeah.
My mother is an amazing cook, and I've mentioned her and her cooking many times on the show. And one of her specialties that she often is introduces people to is stuffed squash blossoms, or stuffed or squash blossoms prepared in a lot of different ways. And one of my favorite ways is to make it into a sauté of them. They're really delicious.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very squash blossoms are actually quite large, the ones that she uses. And it's a very involved process, and it's a very good example example of a seasonal food,
uh-huh,
because they're only available in the summertime when the squash vines are in bloom, obviously. And of course, you are compromising your squashes. Every blossom that you take that isn't pollinated, you know, you lose a squash, but they are so delicious and have such a unique taste that it's worth, you know, losing the zucchini or the squash or whatever she was growing. And the flowers themselves are huge and the stems are hairy.
Yeah.
And my mother actually sautés them with the young shoots and leaves when they're very, very young. And you have to, it's a very involved process. And so we only eat it, you know, a few times during the year. But it's kind of like a rite of passage for summer when you have the squash blossom. So she sautés them with garlic and cheese, or she makes this amazing, she stuffs them, kind of like how people do jalapeno peppers,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
So she fills them with cheese and ricotta and spices, then breads them and deep fries them.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of the most delicious things. And you don't really feel like you're eating
a flower. No, because they're so light. They're so light.
Yeah, yeah. They're really, that's one of the easiest and probably safest of the flowers to eat and easiest to grow, and you get a lot of right. flowers on one vine that you can use.
Right. Now, not every flower is edible.
Yeah.
And of course, sampling flowers randomly can make you very, very sick.
Yeah.
So please know what you're eating before you're ingesting. And remember that horrible scene from, what was the movie?
Into the Wild.
Into the Wild,
oh,
where that
God.
Poor guy in that Alaska
was, oh, that was
dies from ingestion of the wrong plant.
Yeah, they were very similar plants.
Yeah, and he was a little delirious. And anyway, see the movie. It's amazing. But there's also this great book called Edible Flowers, From Garden to Palate by Kathy Wilkinson Barish, if you want some more information. But generally, here are some tips to help you choose the right flowers and to serve them in the right way. You want to pick them early in the morning on the day that they're to be served, when the water content is at its highest. You want to clean them. Make sure you shake each flower to dislodge any insects that may be hidden in the petal folds. You want to wash them in a strainer and drain them. Allow them to dry, as you would salad greens, on absorbent paper. Keep them out of direct sunlight because you want them to retain their color and their scent. They can be preserved and saved for a few days by keeping them on moist paper and storing them in a sealed container or plastic wrap. If the flowers do become limp, they can be revived by floating them in ice water for a few moments, not too long, or they will lose some of their flavor.
Yeah, they're a very ephemeral thing, is what we're saying. It's not the kind of thing that you can
manhandle.
They're, you know,
it's
just
not meat.
No, and it's to be used sparingly.
Yeah,
you know,
but it really adds a really elegant touch, you know, to a dinner party or to a plate or to your digestive system. Even it's a interesting way of getting some macro greens into you. They can also be candied.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and the way you do that is you make an egg white wash. Literally, you paint this egg white wash over the flowers and then sprinkle them with some super fine granulated sugar. And then you just let them dry on a wire rack or on wax paper at room temperature. And this could take, depending upon the flower, anywhere from 12 to 36 hours. And they're completely dry when they are stiff and brittle to the touch. You really want to give them time to let that water evaporate out.
And it's so much more beautiful and tasty than those fake piped, you know, bad.
Oh, I like those buttercream flowers too. But it is really beautiful to have a real purple pansy on your cupcake.
I know. I remember when I was planning my wedding many, many years ago, and I asked the florist, I wanted fresh flowers, you know.
Yeah, right.
Same kind of situation. Yeah. I wanted fresh flowers incorporated into the wedding cake, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, again, the florist interpreted it in a way that was not at all what I had in mind. She had these orchid blossoms, which were from, you know.
And you got married in November?
Yeah. And I was like the most ugly, like, and I was like, no, you don't understand at all what I'm saying, you know? Yeah. So people have an idea, you know, the more exotic, sometimes they think, oh, it's got to be exotic or big. And there's
tropical.
No, yeah. People think tropical. But this simple little violet, you know, or a pansy sugared like that is all you need, you know, in terms of decoration and sweetness.
And one thing I like to do for the kind of spring and summer months, and this really like kicks off your spring, is ice cubes, flour ice cubes.
That's awesome.
You can rinse your flours and put them aside and make sure they're nice and dry. Meanwhile, you want to boil some water to use for the ice cubes. The reason you boil it is because it gives you a really crystal clean cube. You want to place each blossom in each ice cube compartment. So like one or two per compartment, depending on what flour you're using. And then you want to fill each compartment with this boiled water only halfway full and freeze it. After they're solid frozen, these half cubes, then you want to fill each compartment the rest of the way with the remaining boiled water and then freeze it till it's ready to use. And then you can have these, you know, for weeks.
That'd be so nice to put in like lemonade or like a cocktail.
Spritzer.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. To infuse. It's a delicate way to infuse. I could see like something like
a mint
lavender
julep.
Or mint flowers, because the flowers have the fragrance too, you know?
And before we get into individual flours, there's one last really fun recipe, which was flour butter.
Mm, that sounds great.
Because, you know, anything mixed with butter is even better.
It's butter. It's butter.
So for this recipe, you're going to take a half to one cup cup of chopped or dried petals to 1 pound of sweet unsalted butter. And you want to make sure the butter is at room temperature. And you're going to mix the petals into the warm room temperature butter and keep it at room temperature overnight so that the flavors really fuse into one another. And then you can, you know, make this into a form or put it into a ramekin or something and chill this so that it's nice and cool when you serve it. And this can last for several months. You can even freeze it. So it's a really sweet way of getting some color onto your, you know, bread. Yeah, or
that'd be really nice for Easter, actually.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Something sweet to put on your bread.
So, of course, there's, you know, other things to do. You can make infused syrup. You can make tea, you know, float flowers in your cocktails. We'll put some of these tips and recipes on our Facebook fan page. But right now we have to take a break. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
Stay tuned.
Is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Join Linda Palacio for A Taste of the Past every Thursday at 12 p.m. as she indulges her curiosities about food, cooking, drinking, and dining of the past by taking a journey through culinary history. Linda interviews authors, scholars, friends, and chroniclers to learn about what was eaten, where, and how, from as long ago as ancient Mesopotamia and Rome, right up to the grazing tables and deli counters of today. The show underscores food as a lively link between present and past cultures. Again, that's Thursday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, well, welcome back to We Dig Plants. We were talking about...
That was some whirly, swirly music.
Oh, I know. I was going to say, wow. I think...
That's good for flowers.
Yes.
Flowers in your plant.
Dancing.
Flowers in your food.
Flowers in your pants.
That so happens all the
flowers
time.
Flowers in my pants. Usually I have mulch in my bra, but not flowers in my pants. That's one of the hazards of gardening and being female, is you do get mulch in places that shouldn't go. Anyway, talking about edible flowers, let's go over some very specific ones that we find interesting and that you might want to try. One that I think is really interesting is calendula.
Yes, marigold.
That's right. Calendula officinalis. And officinalis tells us that it was used in medicines. It was also a medicinal plant. It's a wonderful edible flowers. And the flavors kind of range from spicy to bitter to tangy and peppery. And their sharp taste kind of resembles saffron. In fact, it's also known as poor man's saffron. And it has pretty petals, like of kind of golden orange hues. And you can sprinkle them on soups, or on pasta or rice dishes. It's really great for the herb butters that Alice was talking about in the first part of the show, and also really nice in salads. And you can also use the petals for a little bit of yellow color to tint soups and spreads and scrambled eggs. So it's a nice addition.
I know. Like, can you imagine waking up, you know, making your morning eggs and having orange petals on top or mixed in with your eggs? How gorgeous is that to start the day with?
It makes it a much...
It's a special. It's just a little nice touch. And then you can also use carnations, also known as dianthus. They can be steeped in wine. They can be used for candy and used as cake decorations. It's not just a funeral flower.
No.
The carnation.
Yeah, we had talked about that.
You can use them for desserts. You can...
Yeah, they're fragrant. They're very, very fragrant flowers as well.
Yeah, and they kind of have a light clove-like or a nutmeg scent. Mm-hmm. And they also add color to salads and to aspics, drinks.
Now, one that I think is really interesting, Alice, is its common name is Dame's Rocket, which I already love. And I know that's going to, if I do like an iTunes search, I bet there's a band called Dame's Rocket. I wouldn't be surprised. Its botanical name is Hesperus matronalis, which the little bit of Latin that I know leads me to think matrimony, something to do with maybe marriage,
yes,
or some kind of aspect. Anyway, it's also called Sweet Rocket or Dame's Violet. This plant is often mistaken for phlox, but phlox has 5 petals and Dame's Rocket has just 4. Now, the flowers, as I said, which resemble phlox, are deep lavender and sometimes pink to white. And the plant is part of the mustard family, which is a great family of edible plants. And it includes radishes and broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower and, of course, mustard. And the plant and flowers are edible, but they're fairly bitter, which I kind of like. I like a bitter taste sometimes to sort of offset rich things like pork or other meats, you know? And the flowers are attractive added to green salads, and the young leaves can also be added to your salad greens. But, you know, for culinary purposes, the leaves should be picked before the plant flowers. The seed can also be sprouted and added to salads. Now, it is not the same variety as the herb commonly called rocket, which is used as a green in salads. It's a totally different plant.
Right. Right. And chrysanthemums.
Yes.
You can use chrysanthemums. They're tangy. They're slightly bitter. They range in color from red to white to yellow and orange. They range in taste from a faint peppery to a mild cauliflower. They should be blanched first and then scatter the petals onto the salad. The leaves can also be used to flavor vinegar. And remember to remove the bitter flower base and use the petals only. Young leaves and stems of the chrysanthemum, also known as chop suey greens, are widely used in Oriental stir fry and as a salad seasoning.
Yeah, the Japanese are really, and the Chinese are really into eating a much bigger variety of greens than
they're much more brave, and they don't have as much pasteurized food as we do.
Yeah.
So another one that I love, just because it's the quintessential summer kind of driving down the highway, getting out of town flower for me, is the cornflower.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's also called bachelor's buttons, and they have a slightly sweet to spicy kind of clove-like flavor. And the bloom is also a natural food dye. And this plant is actually more used as garnish, but it adds a really beautiful kind of blue hue.
Yeah, and as we talked about in other shows, blue is kind of special and rarer. True, yeah, blue color in the garden.
You right.
know? And those are really actually easy to grow. The ones that we were talking about, the calendula, the carnations, this cornflower, very easy to grow on your own from seed.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, too, that you really do need to, I just want to emphasize again, you really do need to know which part of the flower you're going to use, because only the petals of some flowers, such as roses or the calendulas, the tulips, chrysanthemums, yucca, and the lavender is edible.
And other parts of the plant are
non-edible.
So you have to be very careful.
Yeah. So when using just the petals, separate them from the rest of the flower just prior to use to make sure that you're getting the right part. But other flowers, Johnny Jump Ups, violets, runner beans, honeysuckle, and clover can be eaten in their entirety. And let's talk for a second about lavender, because that's a really super popular one. And you can eat those flowers. And in fact, a lot of people do. And there's a lot, you know, lavender butter is really, really popular.
And ice cream. Have you ever had lavender ice cream? Is amazing.
Yeah. And it's a very versatile herb and edible. It's great in drinks. You can float the lavender flowers in like a white wine. It's just a lovely, lovely plant. And violets, these are kind of sweet. They've got a nice perfumed flavor. The Johnny Jump Ups and the violets and pansies are in the same family, and they're so colorful. They are purples and yellows and apricots, pastel hues, and it's really nice to eat the leaves as well as the flower. And you can use them to embellish desserts and iced drinks. You can freeze them in bunches. They make gorgeous adornments for frosted cakes, sorbets, and any other desserts.
Now, we can't talk about edible flowers without talking about roses.
Yeah.
Right? Of course, Alice.
Yeah.
And the kind that we're talking about is Rosa rugosa or Rosa gallica officinalis, these species roses.
Right.
And the flavors of the petals depend on the type, the color, the soil conditions. But the flavors reminiscent of strawberries and green apples, which is very interesting because, of course, the apple is in the rose family.
Uh-huh.
Right? So they're sweet. Sometimes they have like subtle undertones like a fruit or mint or spice. Roses are edible. And, you know, with the sort of the flavor being more pronounced in the darker varieties. In miniature varieties, you can use to garnish ice creams and desserts, or the larger petals can be sprinkled on desserts or salads. You can also, as Alice has suggested, freeze them in ice cubes and float them in punches. Their petals are used in syrups, jellies, perfume butters, and in sweet spreads. But remember to remove the bitter white portion of the petals and just use, you know, the colored part of it.
Yeah. Another really super cool one is fuchsias, because they're so kind of architectural in their shape. They're very, very dynamic. The blooms have a slightly acidic flavor, and you really get crazy explosive colors and shapes. So it's an ideal garnish. And the berries are also edible of the fuchsia. You can also do fruit flowers.
Yeah.
You have to be careful, though, because there are some cyanide precursors in some of the fruit flowers, apple blossoms in particular. They are beautiful. They have a very delicate floral flavor and aroma, and they're very nice accompaniment to fruit dishes, and they can be easily candied. But again, eat them in moderation, because some of these flowers contain cyanide precursors.
Well, let's talk about citrus blossoms, Alice.
Yeah, speaking of, yeah.
Earlier today, I was in a greenhouse that had, I'm not exaggerating when I say now, this was a small lemon shrub in like a 12-inch wide pot, you know? It had probably 100 to 200 blossoms on it.
Wow. Right, that must have like knocked your socks off.
They were just starting to open, but that, you know, I think most people like the smell and taste of citrus,
Sure.
I think it's a pretty popular kind of, you know, essence. But you can also use a little bit, it, with moderation, of the waxy petals of, uh-huh. of the flower, not just from the fruit. Distilled orange flower, you know, is very often used in Middle Eastern pastries uh-huh. and in beverages. And it's, of course, very lemony, and it adds a really great essence. So you can use those orange, if you have a fruit tree, an orange or a lemon or a lime or grapefruit or kumquat flower. You uh-huh. just need a little bit.
It goes a long way.
Yeah, because it's so, and they're beautiful to look at too. They have structure. They're waxy and interesting looking, uh-huh. you know, as a flower.
I actually got a great lemonade at an Indian, like a little Indian cafe on the Lower East Side. And I ordered the lemonade thinking, yeah, it's just going to be kind of a standard lemonade. But they had orange blossom. It wasn't a liqueur, but it was just a flavored water. Mm-hmm. And they added this to the lemonade, and it was unbelievable.
Yeah, you can add more than just mint to lemonade.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things. Well, we were talking about kind of sweeter kinds of things, but let's remember that, you know, most people grow herbs. That's one of the easiest things to grow in pots
right.
and in urban situations. And of course, you can, you know, in herbs, you mostly think of the leaf part uh-huh. as being edible, but you uh-huh. can also use the flowers.
Uh-huh.
For example, in the alliums, the leeks, the chives, garlic, they're the flowering onions.
And the fennel.
Yeah.
You can use the umbel flower head.
Mm-hmm. And they're really delicious. And it's also a way to alliums tend to be very aggressive and invasive in the garden. So if you chop off the flower heads,
it's not going to go to seed.
And you can eat them. And they're really, they taste like the allium. They taste like the chive,
uh-huh.
but they add a beautiful color and texture to a salad.
Yeah, that light purple.
Mm-hmm.
And then just back to the fennel for a second.
Yeah.
It really colors, it can color
the liquid
or whatever you're using into this beautiful kind of yellowy orange color, which is really, really, can be very dynamic.
And fennel is very aggressive too and goes to seed like crazy.
Yeah.
So chop off those blossoms and use them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we are out of time. And I think Carmen and I want to keep talking about flowers. Now we just need to go eat some.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. You can listen to podcast of this show via iTunes or, as always, on the website archive, heritageradionetwork.com. Check us out on Facebook, Groundworks Inc., We Dig Plants, and on Twitter, We Dig Plants. Happy gardening.
See you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. In the next few weeks, Heritage Foods USA will be offering an interesting variety of amazing products, ranging from top quality seafood to their famous pork cuts. At the end of May, the Heritage team will go up to Maine to harvest fresh lobster with sustainable lobstermen. These delicious lobster are a perfect way to kick off the summer season. In the pork department, Heritage Foods USA will offer the maple-cured smoked boneless Heritage ham at an unbeatable price. This offer won't last long, so get them while you can. Place your order today at heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985. That's 718-389-0985 to place your order with Andrea or Ashley. And don't forget to sign up for the email list and to check them on Facebook and Twitter to get in on their new products, deals, and offers from Heritage Foods USA.
This is Katie Kiefer with Behind the Scenes Food News for the week of May 11th. One of the most exciting things that I found in my trolling of trade blogs this week was the announcement of a new initiative called Agri, that's capital A-G, small R-E-E. So it's sort of agriculture and green, I suppose, is the idea behind that. And the co-chairs include Dan Glickman, who is a former secretary of the USDA under Clinton, Gary Hirschberg, who is the president and CEO of Stonyfield Farm, Jim Mosley, who is a former deputy secretary at the USDA under George Bush, and Emmy Simmons, a former assistant administrator for economic growth, agriculture, and trade at the U.S. Agency for International Development. So this is kind of a mixed bag of political viewpoints here, which is what made me really sit up and take notice. It's funded by all the usual suspects like the Gates Foundation, the Ford Foundation, etc. But leading off in their first meeting, Glickman stressed the importance of involving all stakeholders and seeking common ground in addressing the need to feed a growing global population and doing so in ways that are environmentally, economically, and socially sustainable. And the eight foundations that are backing Agri, he notes, agreed to set aside their political differences, as did the individual co-chairs, to develop research-based long-term solutions and strategies. I think this is a gigantic step in the right direction. I'm hoping that these guys will have a huge impact on the Farm Bill, which will be coming up again in 2012. So let's keep an eye on Agri. If you want to read more about them and what they're doing and their news, they do have a website. It's www.foodandagpolicy.org. This has been Katie Kiefer with Behind the Scene Food News.
Did you know we have a beer show? Check out a small clip from Beer Sessions Radio.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm here with Ray Dieter from the DBA Boys.
Hey, Jim.
Ray, this is a fun show. We're drinking Belgian beer. We're drinking Ichtigum. Hanging out with the guys from the 124 Rabbit Club. And we got Don and Wendy from Van Berg and the Wolf. Well, let's go back a little bit to kind of build your pedigree. So the two of your top brands that we love and that you have now, Scaldis and Saison DuPont.
Yeah,
tell us how you met those guys, how you started working with them.
Well, Saison DuPont was really... that was.
If you want to hear more, head over to heritageradionetwork.com where new episodes of Beer Sessions are posted every week in our archive. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes.